Welcome to Torti Machanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we will be studying Ezra Perek Vav, Ezra Chapter 6. Perek 5 of Ezra left us in a state of tension and trepidation. The Jews finally have pulled out of their depression with the help of the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, and after 18 years of hopelessness, they begin once again to build the second Beit HaMikdash. Just then, just as they're starting and getting into the building projects, an obstacle steps up to hurt them. A group of people from the other side of the Jordan River, led by the governor Tatnai, challenge their authority to build. A letter is written to the brand new King Darius to see what he will decide in the matter. The echoes of the recent history are playing in the ears of the Jews. When the first group of Tzarei Yudah, the enemies of the Jews from Ezra Perek 4, wrote letters and sent lobbyists to King Cyrus, which resulted in him withdrawing his support, and ended up stopping the Beit HaMikdash project for 18 years. Darius's reply comes in Perek 6, and it is stunning. He immediately puts his servants to work, searching the record houses, as was requested of him, to see if the Jews have permission. And lo and behold, they find a copy of Cyrus's declaration from 18 years earlier. The decree that Darius finds is even more detailed than the truncated version that we saw in Ezra Perek 1. In this version, Cyrus actually gives details of how he would like the Beit HaMikdash to be built, saying in verse 3-4, "And let the foundations thereof be strongly laid, the height thereof 80 cubits, and the breadth thereof 80 cubits. With 3 rows of great stones and a row of new timber, and let the expenses be given out of the king's house." Now we hear exactly how Cyrus wants the Beit HaMikdash to be built. But this last detail that we now learn about from Cyrus's original decree is also stunning. Cyrus had offered not only to give back the vessels of the first Beit HaMikdash to the people going to build the second, like it said in Perek 1 and also says here in Perek 6, but in this version that Darius finds, which is the same decree, it's just here given in a little bit more detail than Ezra wanted to include in Perek Aleph, here it says that Cyrus was going to contribute vast sums to build the actual building of the Beit HaMikdash. This really could help us understand a lot of things. First of all, why the Jews immediately tried to buy cedar trees, even though they themselves were not wealthy. In fact, really, they were poor. But we see now that they had support, the financial support of the palace behind them. It also helps us understand why, even if Cyrus didn't explicitly withdraw his support for the Beit HaMikdash, why his passivity, his not specific support, would also create a situation where the Jews would not continue building, as their main source of funding had dried up. Also helps us understand why Haggai the prophet would encourage the Jews to give up on their hope of a dream and grand, their dream of a grand and expensive Beit HaMikdash, and just encourage them to build one that they were able to afford with or without the king's help. And this ultimately is what gets the people to actually start building again. Now, satisfied that the Jews actually do have permission to build the Beit HaMikdash, which is amazing, because in the Jews' head, they didn't really have permission. Cyrus was not on their side, but apparently either Cyrus never wrote that decree, or somehow that decree wasn't included in the record houses. Maybe it was conveyed by letter, or again, it is again very possible that Cyrus never actually explicitly withdrew his support with a decree. It could be he either stopped the funding, or the Jews were really just too scared. But what Darius finds is a decree, the original decree, where Cyrus was very in favor of building the Beit HaMikdash. And based on this, Darius makes a ruling. "Now," says Darius in verse 6, "you, Tatnai, governor of the province beyond the river, Shatharbaznai and the rest of the colleagues, the officials of the province beyond the river, stay away from that place." Darius is unequivocal. Go away. Stop bothering them. Allow the work of this house to go on. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on its site. Now these words alone would have been music to the ears of the Jews who were waiting with bated breath and tension for Darius's reply. Was he going to let them continue? Was he not? Are we going to replay what happened to us with Cyrus, or is this going to be different? They had not asked permission to do this. And now it looks like they are the winners. But what's amazing is Darius's reply doesn't stop there. He continues, "And I hereby issue an order concerning what you must do to help these elders of the Jews rebuild the house of God. This is what you need to do, Tatnai and co, to help the Jews, not just to leave them alone, but actually to help them. And this is what you should do. The expenses are to be paid to these men with dispatch out of the resources of the king derived from the taxes of the province of beyond the river," meaning where they live, "so that the work will not be stopped. They are to be given daily, without fail, whatever they need of young bulls, rams, or lambs as burnt offerings for the God of heaven, and wheat, salt, wine, oil at the order of the priests in Jerusalem, that they may offer sacrifices of sweet savor unto the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons." Instead of stopping the work, like Tatnai and co. intended to do, by starting up with the Jews, they actually end up having to fund part of the project. Now, this may sound eerily familiar to anyone whose ear is attuned to the Purim story. Remember Haman, who wanted to hurt Mordechai? So in response to Ahasuerus' request of what should be done to a man who the king wishes to honor, Haman described a grand, extravagant show of power for the man who he thought would be him, and a humiliating experience for the man he thought would be Mordechai. Remember, dress this man in the king's clothes and a servant of the king should parade him around on a horse. Of course, Haman didn't know that his own words would be used against him and he would be the one humiliating himself, leading Mordechai around the city in a grand and extravagant fashion. And Darius's decree does not even stop there. Not only does he tell them to leave the Jews alone, and not only does he tell them that now they have to contribute financially to the Beit HaMikdash, in verse 11, he continues, "I also issue an order that whoever alters this decree shall have a beam removed from his house, and he shall be impaled on it and his house confiscated." Anyone who decided not to listen, and you can imagine that Tatnai and crew were very likely to try to get out of fulfilling this decree. I mean, this is really their worst nightmare. So anyone who doesn't listen, the central beam of his house is going to be pulled out, meaning his house is going to get knocked down. And then this person is going to be impaled or hung on this beam. Now, if we thought the Purim reference was clear before this, this pasuk about the man who challenges the Jews is going to hang from a beam, it seals the deal. The Jews continue building the Beit HaMikdash with great joy. It takes them 4 years, and they finished it, you guess it, in the month of Adar. Now, Chazal are sensitive to this parallel between Ezra, Parag Vav, the story of the letter of Darius, and the Purim story. Vayikra Rabba states that Darius was actually the son of Esther and Ahasuerus, and was therefore raised by a Jewish mother, and that would help explain why he is so overly concerned with the Jews. While some historians doubt that this statement could be taken literally in terms of how the timeline plays out, it certainly alerts us to the almost miraculous nature of Darius's interaction with the Jewish community. King after king in Jewish history has either tried to completely destroy them, has exiled them, has tried to wipe out their gods, and then you have the Persian kings who are just so fickle and don't seem to stand by their words. And then suddenly comes Darius, and out of the blue, without being asked to, in the beginning, comes out strongly, strongly in favor of the Jews and puts down their enemies. Now, this episode, this letter that could have wreaked havoc, but v'nahafohu, everything turns around, ends up causing delight, is an example not of the miracles of the first Beit HaMikdash, but rather of the second. It is this type of miracle that Ezra the narrator in this Sefer is trying to get the Jews to see, the hand of Hashem in their natural lives. As prophecy declines, the role and agency of people in their own religious experience increases. Is up to the people to seek out Hashem, while in the past, the Nevi'im pointed out his presence explicitly as well as what he wanted. It is up to the people to develop their Torah Shebaal Peh system into one where it can solve problems without the Urim V'Tumim and without consulting Hashem or the prophets. It is up to the people to have strength and perseverance to do what is right instead of what is convenient. It is this sense of purpose and agency that will define the natural miraculousness of the second Beit HaMikdash. Thank you for studying Ezra Parak 6 together, Le'iloi Nishma, Malka Esther, Bat Zvi Yosef.